Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 1st, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Yay, the World Series starts today. Yay!
somebody out there is cheering, I'm sure. No, I'm serious. I mean, I'm not boarding a plane to go out there this year. You certainly aren't, but it's good that it's back, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's been, a good 2 years now, so. And it was interesting. There's a couple articles that have come out about it. One was what's new this year, and, really it's pretty evident what's new. it's right. It's in the fall instead of the summer. COVID is hanging over it like a dark cloud. And a bunch of new online events. That's really the summary. So I think the good thing is it's just that it's back. So one of the things I do miss is that every year the Poker News upper staff does predictions for the World Series, and they did two articles this year on it. I just plucked the first one because that's enough for us to talk about the show, but definitely go to pokernews.com and you can read the second one if you want. But interesting things for predicting, and it's a hard year to predict, right?
Yeah, so sure.
It's completely different than it ever has been, so very hard to make these predictions. So here's what I thought we could do. We could go through these predictions. I will kind of give you a quick summary of what the Poker News staff was, and I think it's nine of them, including Wisconsin Ambassador Chad Holloway, who's their executive editor. So nine people weighing in there, and then you and I can throw in a couple guesses here.
Sure.
We're not in the know at all, so we'll make it even funnier. All right, so the first one was, which poker pro will go on the first Twitter rant of the year? And those nine responses were pretty much split equally among Alan Kessler and Mike Matisau. But someone threw a Phil Hellmuth in just to mix it up a little bit. So I guess what I forgot about this is that first Twitter rant. I was thinking the most Twitter rants, which would be a good race, I think, between Alan and Mike.
Yeah.
I don't really expect a Phil Hellmuth Twitter rant. He likes a rant in person more than Twitter. So, but the first one, I think you got to go with Mike Matisau on the first one.
Well, this kind of reminds me of the who's going to win the coin flip at the Super Bowl kind of, right? It's just like the obvious thing that's going to be the first thing that happens in the World Series. But I'm going to go with Alan Kessler because I think that he likes to bitch about the structures and stuff like that before you even play. So he may get on some sort of rant even before. Matisau usually just reacts, whereas Kessler does a deep dive into everything. And so I bet it's going to be Kessler.
Well, here's why I went with Matisau once I reread it and said first, because it's the interesting dichotomy here. So you have Alan Kessler, and they've both been tweeting away at this leading up to it anyhow. So
right.
Alan is obviously vaccinated and has been tweeting about how these are going to be the hardest bracelets to win, presumably in his opinion, because only smart people are going to be there because the dumb people aren't getting vaccinated, right? and then you have Mike Matisau on the complete other end, clearly not vaccinated, clearly hating the World Series for making these mandates, so therefore probably won't be there. So the first one, I think once it starts, he might have been starting today tweeting about how the series is starting and what a big mistake they made. So that's why I think it might be the first one. Kessler will probably wait until he doesn't get a bracelet and complains about all the strong feels. So first one, I think it's going to get Matisau. But Twitter, those two, I'm not a Twitter guy, but those two will be definitely interesting to watch.
It's funny because if these were actual like things you could bet on in Vegas, you could just bet on yourself and then go into a Twitter rant.
Oh, yeah. Right, you know?
But that's pretty funny. I'm going to go with Kessler.
All right. Next one. What event do you think will create the most buzz? And the answers are split almost evenly between the main event, the reunion, which is features the Hall of Famers with bounties on their heads, and that GG flip and go, where everyone is all in on the first hand.
I guess you have to define buzz.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna assume they mean most talked about.
Yeah, it's weird because you always think of buzz as positive. You know, yeah, like oh, they're all, oh, this is so cool, the reunion's here, Hall of Famers, oh, it's so cool, we're having a main event. I can't imagine anyone saying, it's so cool that we all went all in on the first hand. Yeah, you know, they might bitch about it.
It was probably an unfortunate word. You're right, buzz does have that connotation.
You know? So I think a lot of people are going to bitch about the flip and go. Although you can't really bitch about it. You're agreeing to it. So, yeah.
If you pluck down that at $1,100, I mean, you know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, it's your fault. So I'm going with the reunion.
Yeah, that's what I don't really see how it could not be. I mean, that is a truly unique event. And it's really dripping in sentimental. Right. Too early in the morning. Right. So, I mean, you get all these Hall of Famers coming back, presumably. I mean, I would assume most of them, as long as they're vaccinated, would be back because it's a free roll for them, right?
Yeah.
The way they did with the bounties, like you get the bounties worth, you know, the year that you went in. They did a really good job designing that, I think. So, I think there's going to be a lot of talk about the flip and go just because it is the novelty of it, but the buzz, and I mean that in a positive way too, like you are, but it has to be the reunion, right?
Yeah,
I'm kind of surprised that people talked about the main event. I mean, I think really the only buzz or discussion about the main event will be how small a field is, or if it somehow isn't a small field.
Exactly.
But other than that, there's nothing different about the main event this year than any other year.
Agreed.
I think.
Agreed.
All right, next one. Considering the travel restrictions into the United States, how many non-Americans will win bracelets from the, well, they said 88 event schedule, but I think it's up to 99 with those the online bracelets. So.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, it's...
Well, I'm sorry. Their answers were ranged from 11 to 33.
When I looked at that spread, I thought definitely closer to 11. I mean, I don't see them winning that many. They don't... I mean, there are a lot that they win in past years, but they barely get to that number, even when it's a full everybody can come into the country number. So, I would shade toward 11.
Yeah. So I try to do a little math here, which I'll explain later on for one of these other ones. And based on that math, I came up with about 29, but that was based on a 99 event schedule, and they're basing it on an 88 event schedule. So to be consistent with that, I might drop that down to like 20, 25 maybe.
Okay.
But that math will make more sense when we get to this question.
Yeah, I'm thinking 15, 18, something like that. I mean, maybe 20, but it's like, you know, if so many people are restricted, or they'd have to prove that they're vaccinated and they have to get that test and all that to get into the country and all that, and it's a lot of work. And then here's the other thing people aren't really remembering, is a lot of people who aren't in America are looking at America right now like, wow, we can't go there. Not because we're idiots, but because this Delta variant, it's scaring the hell out of everybody. And, you know, and it's like a microcosm of that is Florida, where we are. People don't want to come here, and they don't want us going there, you know, within their own country. So, you know, I think that I think they're, if they're thinking 33 winners, I think they're overestimating how many people are actually going to want to come to this country for one tournament, you know, I mean, one tournament series. So I'm going to go on the lighter side in 15 to 20.
Yeah, what makes this so hard is all the things you mentioned, but also that it doesn't necessarily matter how many non-Americans play, just how well the ones that do play, right?
I mean, right.
You could have a couple double bracelet winners from Canada or Austria or wherever that make up that number, too. So that's what makes it very hard to predict as well, too.
And it is going to be a tougher field. I realize Alan's saying it because they're going to be smarter. But it is going to be a tougher field because professional players are probably going to dominate this now because that's their way of life. The other people are like, you know what? I'm really going to risk my hobby to be the thing that kills me, you know, so, or makes me sick or makes me miserable or whatever. So I don't know. I see it on the low end there. So I was going to say we should have like a real wager, me and you, but I can't afford to lose anything right now. So forget it.
Well, it doesn't have to be a monetary wager.
Well, I'm not dressing up in like your favorite, you know, Game of Thrones character and walking down the street.
Maybe you wear a Lita Ford shirt around the house and I wear
That's pretty funny.
All right, which established pro will finally win his or her first bracelet this year? There were a lot of different opinions, but Dan Smith got three of the nine staffers' choice. And certainly I think that's the smart money because he is the most established player with the best resume so far out there, including tournament winnings without a bracelet. So that certainly would be the person to put the money on. One of the ones that I think is interesting is Maurice Hawkins, and people outside of Florida may not know him as well as those of us here in Florida because he really dominated Florida poker forever. But the dude has 14 circuit rings.
Yeah, no, it's insane.
And not a bracelet, so that would be one that I think I'd keep my eye on. Another interesting one is Maria Ho doesn't have a bracelet yet either, too.
And oh, that's right.
A lot of deep runs as well, too. So those would be people to look at. But
I'm going with Tony Cousineau.
Yeah, there we go.
Is he even playing anymore? I don't even know.
That's a good question. I wonder. But
it's funny. Yeah. The other day, I got somebody. I'm going back to Connecticut next week, so there's no show next week. By the way, I forgot to tell you that. So I'm going to Connecticut for a week, and my school asked me to speak there, and I got contacted through LinkedIn by one of the students, and I'm like, LinkedIn? Oh my God, does anybody still use this thing? So I went on there, and I saw, like, a bunch of poker pros that were friends, not friends, but linked in with me. And now they're like lawyers now. And so I don't even know if half these guys that I would even predict are still playing.
Right? Yeah. I don't know.
So I'm going to go with Tony Cousineau, which is obviously a horrible choice, but Dan Smith probably is the way to go.
All right. How many events will Phil Ivey play, and how many will he cash in? The number of events range from 8 to 39 on the Poker News responses, and the caches range from 2 to 20. I have no frame of reference on this.
No, I know.
I don't follow him anymore. I haven't heard anything from him recently. I don't know how interested he is in playing. I don't know if he's vaccinated. I don't know. There's all kinds of things I don't know here, and so this is why we would not be good on this one. So
plus there's the whole Borgata lawsuit thing, right? I mean, if he does play in cash, he's got to turn it over to them still. I'm sure that's not paid in full, right? So,
yeah, again, that's been so long, too. I don't know what's going on with that either. So, yeah, you're right. So,
unreal.
The only wager I was willing to make here is that he'll cash in 40% of the events he enters.
Okay, that makes sense.
I feel pretty safe on that number. I don't have any idea how many events, but the dude cashes when he plays.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. What do you think players will make of the flip and go bracelet? Lots of different opinions from the Poker News staff, with most admitting that it may be skeptical or snub it, but will eventually like it and be excited about it.
I can't see anyone being excited about it. I mean, only the one out of 10 are going to like it. I mean, that's what, or one out of 9 or whatever. I mean, to me, it's like, okay, it's not a rebuy tournament where you could put in your 1100 and then, unless maybe you can. Maybe you can re-enter. I don't know.
I don't think so. Because yeah. I think the way it's structured, I'm like, you can't. You can't have re-entry.
Yeah, so flip and go. I mean, you got a 1 in whatever shot, 9 or 10 shot of moving on, you know, and then it's just like a tournament later with, you know, 1/10 of the field, and we all have a lot more chips. It's weird. You're going to get a lot of loose play later on, early on, I mean, and you know that could be interesting. But well, I mean, you have to flip a coin.
Interesting is that after that first hand, then it's just a normal tournament. So I don't think anything changes out of that, other than the fact that you're in the money. So you feel players always feel more comfortable when they're in the money, right?
Right. So they're going to be loose. They're going to have a ton of chips with a smaller. I mean, unless they've already adjusted the blind structure for everyone to have that many chips.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm sure they did. I mean, there's no way that. I mean, I think they're smart on the structure on how long they want this thing to last. I would think, but I don't know.
This just falls into the carnival games thing for me.
Well, all right, so here's the thing. I thought about this a lot because we're hating on it. I've been hating on it. I just don't get – I honestly don't get it. I mean, there's literally no skill at the beginning other than the fact that you get three cards and you have to pick the two best there. But that's like Pineapple. I'm like
yeah.
– but the only difference is there's not a flop. If there's a flop, then it's that's what makes Pineapple – Crazy Pineapple interesting, right? Because now you get to decide whether you want to go for the flush or keep your two pair or whatever, right?
Right.
It's free flop. So, I mean, there is some strategy there, not just dismissing it out of hand completely, but not enough to make it, you know, anything much more different than blackjack, I would think. Right. But so the more I thought about it, I'm like, I'm trying to see the reaction. Obviously this thing is very popular online from what people say. So people like it. Now, whether they like it at $1,100 at the World Series is a question. And I guess the more I thought about it, I mean, all right, let's take if you are a recreational player like you and I, right? Mm-hmm. And most recreational players would love to be able to tell their friends that they cashed in a World Series event, right?
Yeah.
And this is probably your best chance of cashing in an event if you're a rec player, right? Because literally you just have to win this flip and you can say you cashed in a World Series event, right?
Yeah, but if it's 10-handed, I mean, you have a 1 in 10 shot. It's like 10 coin flips. It's not a...
Yeah, you're still not putting in the hard work of playing to cash. You're picking a rock out of a bag like on Survivor. Right? So, and so I guess that's why I think it might be also interesting to pros because, you know, pros, you're working on your hourly rate, right? And the time commitment involved to cash. $1,100 is probably nothing to any established pro, right?
Right.
So you will know within the first 5 minutes whether you made money or not, right? So if you flip in, you go out of the tournament, then you go play cash, you enter another tournament, you know, maybe you go to the Aria series or whatever, right? And you haven't wasted 10 hours of play to not cash like you normally would, right? I would find that – I think that might be attractive to them as well too.
Well, that's the other thing I was thinking was that it's – I know you were introducing the subject with, you know, the everyday, every Joe, whatever guy wants to, you know, tell the story that he cashed. But they're not going to come up with $1,100. They're going to want to get their money's worth, not for a story. Tell you what, Scott, you want to tell that story? Give me $500. I'll give you a bargain at it. And you can tell the whole world you cashed and I'll back you up on it. Right, I mean, other than Hendon Mob, you know, disproving that fact. I mean, really, I mean, that's a lot of money for a story.
Let me clarify that. I think it would be the rec players with money, so not people like doctors, lawyers, those kind of folks that you know that got swept up in the poker boom years ago. That we saw, you know, plunk down these $10,000 for these classes before the World Series,
right.
And were entering buying themselves into the main event for $10,000. Those are the kind of people I think that for them, $1,100 would be worth the coin. Not the coin flip, I guess, the die toss.
The die toss, yeah. The 10-sided Dungeons and Dragons die toss. Dungeons and
Dragons. I don't know. We'll see. It's already got more buzz than the.
See, there's the buzz. That's the buzz we were talking about earlier. This was one of the things that now we're creating buzz for this stupid event. Not good.
Which must mean it's not really stupid after all.
I guess.
All right, how many players will enter the main event? And by frame of reference, the last true main event was 2019. That attracted 8,569 entries. Let's see. So what they said was the range there was 5,818 to 9,125. So some folks actually think it's going to be bigger this year than it was last year. And in 2019, where do you go?
This is hard to – I thought this was going to be one of the easier ones to answer, and it's not because – and I'll give a quick thing. So, you know, I'm a member of these bonsai clubs, and we every year have an auction at our club. So people will bring in the trees that they're tired of or don't want anymore or they've got to get rid of or whatever it is. And then people will auction them off, and, you know, we have a decent amount – well, this last auction we had was the first one we had in 2 years because the one before was shut down because of COVID. And people, we made a record for the amount of money we raised for the club. It was remarkable how much money because they had 2 years of just wanting to sell their trees, and 2 years of people wanting to buy trees that they had all their money saved up. And they, so if you take that angle, this could be like a huge World Series. But then you have to remember, only if you're vaccinated are you going to play. And a lot of people who, even if they are vaccinated, don't want to sit in a room with people regardless, because you can still catch it whether you're vaccinated or not. And so this is hard to guess. I'm still going to go like I did with the foreign travel stuff, where I'm going to say a smaller number. But you never know. People are clamoring to spend that money that they've been making online for the last, you know, 2 years or whatever. All these, you know, paychecks that they've been saving to go play poker seriously. Now they got 2 years to save up their bankroll. And so it's hard to answer, but I'm still going to say closer to 6,000.
Yeah, I think you hit all the points I was going to make. It's the difficulty is balancing the vaccination mandate and the approach to or opinions on vaccination versus the pent-up demand. And we know there's pent-up demand. I mean, we saw at our World Championship, 17 events, all of them record-breaking events. Every single one of them was the biggest event that we've ever had.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a little different because there wasn't a vaccination mandate there. So we don't get a true sense of what that meant with that. So that's what makes it difficult. So here's kind of some of the math that I did, though. So the most recent polls I've seen now say that we're down to only 20% of Americans who are still firmly anti-vax. You know, that number keeps going down as they can't go to concerts or they get fired from their jobs or whatever.
Right.
So if you were firmly anti-vaccine and then all of a sudden they took away something like, then all of a sudden you reassessed your priorities.
Right.
So it's 20% now, right? So I kind of started there. I just wiped 20% off at the 2019 number, I think. The foreigners one, as we mentioned, is really hard to predict because I just don't know, you know, all those things that you mentioned earlier, where they're going to come. Also, there's a they're part of that other 20% too, I think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm kind of went like 10% that. So I'm kind of looking like a 30% reduction. So that would get us down to 5,998.
And I said 6,000. That's hilarious.
So yeah. So yeah. But it's Price is Right, so I'll win.
I went over.
but again, that's all based on that. That's just cold hard vaccination math, right? That doesn't account for what you mentioned, and I think there is – I mean, we have seen it very anecdotally. I'm not saying this is a trend, but very anecdotally I've seen on Twitter people say, I got vaccinated just to play the World Series. So, I mean, that was a trigger point for some, like losing their job was a trigger point for other ones, or not being able to go back to college, or not being able to see KISS like I'm going to see for the first time next week. So, you know – that's what makes that difficult. So that 20% might not be – I was actually trying to do some math on that. I'm like, what I thought in the poker world. I mean, so that's 20% of the normal American population, right? Mm-hmm. That's firmly anti-vax. For whatever reason, and maybe this is offensive, so let me know if it is. But I was thinking that number might be higher in the poker world. I would think there's a higher percentage of poker players who are still firmly anti-vax. Now, I say still – that's before the World Series announced the mandate. So, for whatever reason, it seems like poker players would be more skeptical of. I don't know why that is, but it was my feeling. So
that's because we play 99% of our poker in Florida.
Yeah, it could be.
And so the people you're associated with in Florida, a lot of them here are anti-vax. So you know that could be your impression. Whereas if we were playing in New York or Connecticut, you might not feel that way. But
just depends.
Yeah, I mean that's what we get when we play here. So.
I mean, I think maybe it's more the gambling kind of thing. I know we don't like to call it poker gambling, but, you know, we are putting up money.
Risking,
right? So it is a gamble. So, you know, maybe that's it. But then I negated all that out with the pent-up demand argument. So
that's
where I stayed solid at 30%. So right around 6,000, I guess. So, I mean, I don't know.
It'll be fun to talk about it now as we move forward. You should probably save this file and, like, you know, and get what the answers are to these questions later on. It'd be kind of fun to review it.
But absolutely.
I think I went 6,000, you went 5,998. So we're going to go with 5,999 as the official Antiup guess.
It's official Antiup answer. All right, our final prediction, what will 2021 be the year of at the World Series? Most answers were COVID-related. The second most popular was the year of the pros. So two things that you mentioned there, right, that there are going to be more pros there this year. So there, that makes sense. I find it really hard that people are going to remember the 2021 World Series for anything other than COVID, though.
Right, right. For the fact that it was the, you know, it was the year, the first year back from it, while it was still going on, and while, you know, they were insisting on the vaccinations, and this is all the whole reason why we're even having this discussion is because of COVID. The whole thing, you know, other than the rant and the buzz, I mean, it's all pretty much, hey, what's COVID going to do to these things? What's COVID going to do to that? Is Phil Ivey going to be there because he vaccinated? So every single question basically touched on COVID. So I don't see how it's not related.
Well, yeah, and you've got so many different storylines, too. You've got, you know, how many people are going to come? What is the environment going to be like there? Is there going to be an outbreak? Because, you know, staff still doesn't have to be vaccinated, right? So, I mean, there could be, or at least the, you know, how Twitter spreads stuff. I mean, there could be the assumption that there's an outbreak. And then, of course, you've got, I mean, there's other factors. That, you know, so that article about what's different this year. And there's a couple things that I think that will affect it, and we will have to see how it affects it. One, obviously, by moving it to fall, completely different weather dynamic. And weather does play – I mean, this is indoors, I know, right? But weather does play a factor, I think, in the World Series, because during the summer, it's 120 degrees outside and 46 degrees inside everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And if you're the type of person that revels in that, that's great. That's not me. I think the fall weather, I think, because again, remember, poker is quite a bit mental, right? So that weather could affect some people differently than others. So there's that. And then the other interesting thing I thought that I saw an article on was the marijuana. Now, it's been legal recreationally in Vegas probably since 2019, so it might have been since the last one. But now they're going to have cannabis lounges now where you could actually smoke it inside.
Wow.
Now, what that means, I don't know, again, but it's a new twist that we haven't seen. So there's going to be some I guess my point in that whole last rant was there's some external things, too, beyond COVID that will have an effect this year. So I don't know. We'll see. But
I think it will be year of the COVID, though.
Hard to imagine it won't be.
Yeah.
All right, so we've been holding this for a while, and might as well talk about it now since we're up to 99 beers on the wall or 99 braces on the wall, whatever. Earl Burton, writing on Poker News Daily, asks whether we are devaluing poker trophies and awards by giving too many out now. He says, in the olden days, it was easy to determine the best players. Now, with bracelets and trophies and so many events, it's harder to make that determination. His idea, make online bracelets and trophies separate from live ones, especially in the World Series of Poker.
So I read this, and I don't remember it. I mean, I read it, and I don't remember what he means by this. Like, how do you make them separate? What does that even mean? So what do you say, that the guy won online bracelets, but he didn't win physical bracelets? I don't know what that even means, first of all.
The same thing as separating circuit rings from World Series bracelets. I mean,
but what does it mean, separate them? You're still going to win an award. You're still getting a trophy.
Right, but I guess it's a quantification thing. So this person won 10 online bracelets. Well, this other one won 7 live ones. So, I mean, he's making an assumption, I think, that the online ones are well, certainly different, which we agree with that. But I don't know if his assumption is that it's easier to win online or easier to win live or what. But he thinks it's a difference that it should be separated.
So he's saying when you say –
I'm just trying to – yeah, I know where you're getting at too.
Yeah. And, but the whole point of it, I thought, was that there's just too many awards. Essentially what he's saying is there's too many events. Because every event needs to have something at the end. Otherwise, why are you playing? You're not just playing for the cash if you're playing on a tour or if you're playing at a prestigious event. So now he's trying to devalue the prestige of these events because, I mean, what makes it prestigious? The trophy. You know, what makes it prestigious? The fact that there's 1,000 people playing in it or that there's 10,000 people playing in it or there's 100 people. I mean, so if I go down the street and I win at our local club here, it's not prestigious because anybody can get in for $50 and I beat 30 people. So if it's prestigious, then you've got to win something for that. And generally, it's an award or a trophy. Now, we're on this bandwagon. We've always talked about there's just way too many events now. There just is. But everyone wants their slice of the pie. The slice is getting smaller, but there's nothing you can do about it except for categorizing it. And who's in charge of categorizing it? And even then, it just sounds, it sounds silly to me to say, oh, because this guy beat 10,000 people online, his bracelet's not as valued as sitting across from 10,000 people in the green felt. It just, it's a weird argument. And I agree with the fact that it's too many. There's just so many events, and they're just greedy with how many events they're putting in the World Series. But I don't know about separating them. That doesn't even computate with me. I don't understand how you do that.
I mean, here's the hard truth: is that you've got to be able to adjust with the changing and quantify those changes, right? So, I mean, to say, hey, quit planning events, it's just not realistic, right?
Right.
So. And to say, hey, you can't have online poker now when it's 2021 and we all carry around a device 24 hours a day that we can play poker on,
right,
doesn't make sense either. So I think what you need to do, I mean, I think that the thinking is old school, that bracelets and trophies are the way that we evaluate a player's skill. And I think we're well beyond that now. So that, I think the discussion isn't that way. The discussion is quantifying it. And I would say, you talk to Dan Smith, going back to the first thing, and ask him whether he's a good player or not. I think he's going to say he's a good player.
Exactly.
$40, $50 million playing this game, but he doesn't have a bracelet. So does that make him any less than some weekend warrior like us that, you know, had a good run at the tables one year at the World Series and got a bracelet? No. So, I mean, it's all how you quantify that. So, and I, you know, if I had that lucky run and got a bracelet this year, I would never say I'm a better player than Dan Smith. So, you know, and I wouldn't expect anybody else to either. So I think it's, his beef is probably more a media beef, right? That we keep talking about bracelets and trophies, but, you know, we just like, we like quantifying, and we quantify in different ways. But, and there has been a big push to try to quantify better. I mean, these player of the year rankings that are all computerized with algorithms, that's all an attempt to try to quantify it better. But we've talked about this forever on the show. There's no way that you will ever be able to quantify a poker player's true skill, because there's no way to quantify in cash games.
Exactly. And that's, a lot of people don't even think of tournaments as real poker. You know, and it's always been that way. They're like, you want to tell me the best players in the world are, go sit in the big game at Aria or wherever it is now. And that's those are the best poker players in the world. They're playing for hundreds of thousands of dollars every day, all the time. And the other people are entering it, and they're winning tournaments. Tournaments does not make you a better poker player. A lot of these people, their whole tournament-based approach is like, okay, using my big stack against you, you know, cash games is every single hand is a war. Tournaments are totally different. There's flips and okay, the math tells me to shove here. No one says the math tells me to shove here in a cash game. You know, it just doesn't happen. I mean, it happens when it's like, okay, raise, re-raise, re all that crap, and then you got to put your money in because you only have any more money in front of you. But there's no like, hey, you know what? I got the biggest stack at the table. I'm shoving every hand in a cash game. That's not happening. Because it's not skill, you know. I mean, it's a different kind of skill, but it doesn't make you a great poker player. It makes you a good mathematician. So, yeah.
So, I mean, that's really his answer, is that you have to quantify separately. I mean, it's just impossible to have one single standard per quantification. So you need to be able to say, this is one of the best tournament players in the world. This is one of the best cash game players in the world. And within the tournament, then you need to be able to say, this is one of the best online tournament players in the world, and this is one of the best live. I mean, you're just going to have to do it that way. And I know that's frustrating for some people, but
yeah, it's, you know, it's weird. And I don't think anyone who actually plays for a living gives a rat's ass about any of that.
No, you know, right.
It's just for us, like you said, in the media, trying to quantify these people when you write about them or talk about them or have them on your show or something like that, or in your magazine. You're thinking, why am I going to interview this guy? He's only won an online bracelet. Well, okay. Well, we're saying that that is more valuable than winning one in person, because they beat 45,000 people without getting a tell, you know, or whatever. So, you know, it's just a quantifying thing that helps make it easier for us to discuss them. But in the true value of how people play, I don't think awards are, or even bracelets
are really,
really
necessary. Because, you know, we've been in the media our entire lives, right? If you want to quantify somebody or describe someone, you find the best thing you can describe them with, right?
Yep.
So if it's 10 bracelets, that's what you're going to call it. If they've made $50 million in live tournament winnings, that's what you're going to describe them as, right?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, they're going to get described as something. So, I mean, again, it gets back to just if you're upset that it's all about bracelets, that's fine. But that's not how the true quantification is going to happen anywhere, I don't think. So maybe Earl disagrees, though.
Well, that was the longest banter we've had in ages on this show. And we didn't even talk about Survivor. Weren't you, like, wanting to talk about Survivor 2?
Yeah, I didn't put it on the show yet because I wasn't sure I was going to watch last night. I was. So I will put that on the show next week.
All right, 2 weeks.
Yeah, the 2 weeks.
Okay, any updates? Papes, the Antiup fans' free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games run a 6th, 16th, and 26th every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Also, you can join the Antiup fans' group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to four questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup PokerCast, or Antiup Poker Toro logos. If you have a hand of the week, a listener spotlight, or a call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup fans group on Facebook. Hey, we're going to complete O'Malley's move today. So here comes part one to refresh our memories. We'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing in a $1, $2 No Limit Hold'em home game. This game is ridiculously deep stacked as the buy-in ranges from 100 to 1,000. Most players buy in for the max, but the action is usually relatively loose pre-flop and then can get pretty jumpy after the flop. The game is six-handed. The blinds post, the under-the-gun calls, and we're in the MP with 850, down 150, and the 10 of spades, 10 of clubs. This is a great starting hand six-handed. The table standard raise is 4x, but we account for the limper. We make it $10 to go. The cutoff calls. This player is a speculative one pre-flop, but plays aggressive most of the time after the flop. He bought in for 1,000 and currently sits with 1150. He's up 150. The small blind folds, the big blind calls, and the under-the-gun calls. There's roughly $40 in the pot, and the river is a fairly safe 9 of hearts, 9 of diamonds, 5 of spades. It's check to us. A check might be the best move here. There's no draws, really, and if we're up against the 9, we're pretty much dead in the water. I, however, decided to bet. I made it $30 to go, leaving me around 800 left. All players call. What is going on here? With 160 in the pot, the turn is the tray of clubs. The two players before me once again check. I like a check for pot control here. The cutoff leads out for 100, leaving him around 1,000 behind. The big blind and under the gun both fold. This feels like an in-position player trying to steal the pot. Maybe he has us on ace-king or something. We make the call. With $360 in the pot, the river is the 4 of spades. I like more pot control. We check. Our opponent thinks briefly before betting $300. What's the move?
All right, a 9 would play this the same way as a player trying to take the pot from us after we slow down, so I'm a little worried that our opponent is described as speculative, which would make the 9 more possible. But it does seem we are ahead here. The proverbial coin flip that you have to make that decision by gut check, staring down your opponent.
Yeah, and like I said last week, O'Malley talks about the river there, but he means a flop. So I am very scared of a 9 here. You know, just because we have an overpair doesn't mean we're good or that a 9 isn't possible. We only really beat a bluff here, and smaller pairs wouldn't have probably played it the way he did. So really, it's just you're beating a bluff. So there's a lot of cards out there. I think I have to fold. After all, it is just 10s, right, Daniel?
Just 10s.
Here comes part two.
Hello again. This runout just sucks. If an overcard had come, we might have been able to get away from this. The only draw that got there was 7-6. 7-6 suited might be in this player's range, although calling our nearly pot-sized bet on the flop doesn't fit this player's style. I think if he was going to play 7-6 beyond the flop, he probably would have raised us there to try to push us off and maybe pick up equity on the turn. there was one huge clue that I overlooked. This player is aggressive. Aggressive players don't usually flat call paired flops. Unless, yeah, we made the call. Our opponent tabled the Jack of Clubs, Nine of Clubs for flopped trips, and we need to add on. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, slow down and think about your opponent's style and tendencies. It could save you money. I hope to see you on the felt.
Yeah, I kind of go back to how the player was described. But in the heat of hands, we sometimes forget that or let ourselves believe that this is the one time the player is stepping out of bounds. And that often gets us in trouble, as it did here.
Yeah, I felt like that bet was just too big for me to make a hero call there. And the nine just felt so obvious from the description and from what we discussed. So I would have let it go. That's a tough call to make there. But it's just tens. Yeah, it's just tens. Next hand,
just
please.
Tens.
Right.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Don Hanum is the one that sent us the hand this week, Chris.
All right.
And he actually sent like a little animation off of Global Poker, which is kind of cool, but you don't get to enjoy that. So.
Yeah.
Neither do our listeners, so old school here. So, all right, this is a 50-cent, $1, 6-max, no-limit game on Global Poker. And he says, at this level, the field tends to be pretty competent with a few maniacs thrown in. I don't have any notes on the main villain in this hand, so I don't have any reason to believe he's a maniac. He just sat down at the table. He's under the gun to post the blind. He sits with a full $100 stack and checks his action. How do you check under the gun? Because I missed that. Hijack folds, cutoff limp, also limp, so maybe he limped, if that's what it is.
Oh, yeah, because he posted his blind, so they probably...
I gotcha.
So you go to him first, and he checks and goes to the next guy.
I gotcha. Yep. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so, all right, so he checked his option. Hijack folds, cutoff limps, who also has a $100 stack, button folds, and we are in the small blind with just over $100 and have been dealt, as he says, the dreaded offsuit Cosenza. Ace of spades, ten of diamonds.
Does that make me like the Dread Pirate Roberts on Princess Bride or something? I don't know. I'm still trying to shed this Ace 10 Cosenza thing, but it's not working.
Nope.
I'm not going to mention it in the recap or anything. I'm just going to say it's Ace 10. But let's see. I don't know. I mean, we're in the small blind. So I'm going to be out of position no matter what I do if I want to try to take control of this hand. I'm still going to have to deal with people behind me acting. And Ace 10's not a great hand. It's a decent hand for a blind, so it's a decent hand to call with. A lot of times people are going to put you on crap cards that just don't want to give up the dollar, or in this case 50 cents. So I don't like a raise here. I mean, we're going to be out of position, and you know, it's a 6-max table, so your ace 10 is strong, but you're still out of position. I'd rather be strong and in position, so I'm not going to fold because it's a decent hand, especially if you pop a 10 or an ace and you've only got limpers ahead of you, so limpers generally don't have better than ace 10. So I'm gonna just call and watch the flop.
Yeah, I think that's the right play here. There wasn't a raise. There's a raise. I could throw this in immediately in the muck, but there wasn't a raise. I've got a chuck in 50 cents here. We've got a couple customers already. Hand flops big, great. If not, hey, 50 cents was well worth it. So
yeah.
I think really the only play here is to call. All right. Our hero says, yeah, I know the danger, but I am not going to just let the limpers get off easy. I raise to $6, expecting to isolate the cutoff. The big blind folds, but both the undergun and cutoff call with little hesitation.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, here's kind of the problem is that now, as you mentioned, we're out of position. We have a weak ace. So now we're playing, you know, for two pair straight, a 10. And even then we're not feeling too confident. So, and we're going to have to put a continuation bet out here. And now we got two players that we got to get through here. So I don't know. I think we invited danger here, as he says.
Yeah, I agree. And I've I've put out more money that I didn't have to put out to see this flop. And it's not about that. I mean, we talk about how you use your chips as tools and stuff, but I just think in this case, the tool was, you know, not a hammer. It should have been, you know, a screwdriver or something. I don't know. just kind of relax and do it calmly and gently, or not try to.
Does he have a screwdriver? Doesn't have the same ring as I've got a hammer in that piece.
Exactly, because it's weaker. So you want to be weaker. So, Now, it doesn't mean it's not going to work out in our favor. We're going to have more money in the pot because of it. I'm just saying, you know you're going to have to act last. Why risk more money than you have to initially? So I just like a limp there.
Okay. Pot is $19. The flop is the five of spades, ten of spades, seven of hearts. And, of course, we are first deck.
Well, if you and I had played this hand with a limp, I don't know if I would have done anything differently. I probably still would have bet out. They would have probably thought I hit a 5 or a 7 because I was in the blinds and not maybe put me on a 10 or maybe they'd have jack 10 or something. But I think I still would have bet out just to protect because 8-9 could be out there. 6-8 could be out there. 5-7 could be. I want to see what kind of, you know, and a couple of spades. So it's kind of a wet flop here, even though it looks safe. We have top. I'm going to bet. So I'm probably going to bet pretty big, too. I'm probably going to bet, you know, close to pot.
Yep. I think anywhere from 14 to 19 is appropriate bet here. Anything less than that, you're letting people off here. Definitely has to be on the high side. If somebody wants to bet pot here, I'm not going to say a bad thing about them. So I'd probably go 15 just because I like those nice little even numbers when I'm playing live. I like the odd numbers when I'm playing online. but yeah, anywhere in that range, I think, is perfect. All right, our hero says, from my experience, limp call ranges include a lot of weak suited aces, suited connectors, or one gappers and smallish pairs with top on this board. I'm in pretty good shape for now, except for the monsters on the bed, especially since I have the ace of spades. But with a lot of middle-of-the-deck cards in the opponent's ranges, the flop probably hit at least one of them. I bet $15 to charge the draws and worst tens and fold out low pocket pairs and 7-5 hands, or 7x, 5x hands, I mean, sorry.
Right.
Says the under the gun calls immediately and the cutoff folds. All right, yep, I think that was right in my range, so.
Cool.
We got one player out, and I still feel like we're probably ahead here, so we'll see how the hand develops, though.
I'm going to focus on that word immediately, too.
Yeah. You
know? I'm not saying it's always this way, but a lot of people, if they have a decision to make, or it's like, is my pair good here, or is he bluffing, they take some time. When they call immediately, it's because they automatically see a draw, and they think, okay, that's in a reasonable price. I can, you know, hit the try and make this draw. So they kind of tend to bet or call quickly when they have a draw. And I know that's standard stuff from magazines and books, but it really is, especially online. So I think I'm going to focus on that and think this guy might be drawn. So I'm going to put the hammer down on the turn if it's safe, so.
So the only interesting thing, I think you're right, but the only interesting, what's the draw here? It has to be 8-9, right? I don't see any other draw that would call the $6 raise from a small blind. And even 8-9 seems a little...
Well, you're talking about straights, but the flush, it could be ace-5 or ace-4 spades or something.
But we have the ace of spades, which is really important in this hand, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, could have a... King 7 of spades. You're not going to call a $6 raise for that either. So, yeah,
maybe King Queen of spades.
King Queen spades, yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Because it's not always going to be a nut flush to call a draw. People turn over crap flushes all the time and beat you.
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll see what happens here. All right. Pot's $49. The turn is the 7 of clubs. So the board now is 5 of spades, 10 of spades, 7 of hearts, 7 of clubs, and we are still first deck.
Well, I mean, you don't like seeing the 7 because you're thinking the guy is stuck around because he had a 7. So now you got to think about specific 7s that would have played this hand that way. So 7-6? Maybe. 7-8? Maybe. Ace-7? Maybe. You know, some sort of ace of clubs 7. No, because even 7 clubs and 8, 7 hearts are also... Ace-7 of spades? No, we have the ace of spades. So it has to be literally the ace-7 of diamonds to be the hand that would have that we think would limp, or the 6-7, 7-8 stuff that we talked about. So you have to think about it. You have to put some money out here. If you check now, they'll just steal this pot from you.
Yeah, steal the pot from you, which is, again, the danger in playing from...
positions. Exactly. So, I mean, I'm going to bet probably half the pot here, whatever that... What did you say the pot was?
49.
50, yeah, 25. So 25, 27, something like that.
Yeah, so I guess here's the reason I'm not as scared about the 7 as I should be, is because of that quick call, which we just talked about. The quick call is, again, almost always that draw, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's middle pair that quickly calls. I mean, I think at that point you got to think a little bit longer. I mean, not forever, but It just doesn't fit in that immediate call. So for whatever reason, maybe I'm talking myself into losing my stack here, but that seven doesn't scare me as much as I think at first blush it should.
So. Yeah, the only hand that quickly calls that has a seven in it is 7-8 of spades, maybe.
Yep. Yep.
And you know, that's such a specific hand.
Specific, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to stick with the bet here.
Yeah, and if we're going to worry about that level of specificity, then we should worry about sets already, right?
Right.
Okay, our hero says, sigh. Okay, so there's a possibility the villain would still call with a seven, knowing that I have a lot of Broadway hands without tens in my range, too. But something about how fast he called the flop made me think he either had a worse 10 or a draw. All right, so that's exactly what we're thinking. He says, I bet $29 to keep up the pressure, and the villain quickly calls again.
See, that quickly call, and that's a decent bet, but, you know, if you're seeing, let's see, there's 50 and 30, so 80. So if you're seeing 80 in the pot, you know, and you've got a decent stack in front of you, and, you know, you're also waiting for me to slow down, he could still be saying, okay, I'm drawn, but I'm going to, if you give me any chance on the river, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to steal this pot from you with a float. So, yeah, that quickly call doesn't mean he has a seven. And I don't think he has a set in the boat now. So I'm thinking we're still ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. So here's the problem now with the draw scenario that we had is this board is not exciting for draws now. It's paired. So I don't know if you quickly call again now. I'm not saying a draw is going to fold here, but I think now you slow down a little bit and think things through a little bit more. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, the river, let's see, pot's now $107. The river is the five of hearts. Our final board is five of spades, ten of spades, seven of hearts, seven of clubs, five of hearts. And, of course, we are still first act.
Well, again, it's the same argument that we weren't scared of the seven. We're not going to be scared of this five. Nobody is quickly calling all this cash with a five in their hand when we're proving that we have something better than a five in our hand. So it wasn't a five, and it's not a seven. So you could have a 10 like us, and we're beating any 10. So this is the same hand.
Yep.
I don't see myself not betting here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would do, I could slow down here and call any bet. Because if you slow down here, you give the option of the player bluffing at you back. Whereas if he doesn't have anything, you bet out, he could fold. And if we are behind here, maybe we get away at a lower price than we would pay. So I think that's why I'm going to check. I mean, I guess you risk the check behind with the best hand, but I don't know a lot of hands here you have beat that are going to call at this point.
It's tough because when you think about value, you know, you're saying to yourself, well, this guy could have Jack 10. You know, and he's thinking he's good, but he might check behind because he's worried you have Queen 10 or Ace 10.
Yeah.
So, bet gets a call. You know, a bet gets a call, whereas, you know, a check gets a check behind, you know, you lose value. So, I don't know. It's tough. And you were saying how we get away with, but if the guy shoves, now you got a decision to make rather than, well, I guess the shove is not that much.
The shove is going to be.
It's only going to be like $50.
Right. Because we started with about $100 pre-flop.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
$50 left, something like that.
Well, that's the thing, though, right? The bet's going to be 50 anyway, so why? We're not going to fold to a $50 bet, so we might as well make that bet and get maybe the five folds. Maybe the five thinks we have a seven.
Yeah.
I'm betting.
It's an interesting dilemma, because if he's got nothing, the only way he's going to put the $50 in is if we check and he tries to bluff us off of this. Now, a good player would know $50 is not big enough to bluff here with really against us, so he's probably not going to do. So if you think of it that way, then maybe we do have to put the money in ourselves.
Yeah, I'm betting.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably more I thought about it. Yeah, that does make more sense to bet here. So, all right, our hero says, I have to admit that I wasn't really expecting to call on the turn, but that insta-call still registered with me as trying to seem strong. When turn trips, at least contemplate raising for a few seconds. Or was the few seconds I took to size my bet all the time he needed to determine that he was going to let me hang myself? With only half a pot-sized bet left, I paused and fell back on the position. No worse hands are going to call a bet now, and no better hands are going to fold. I check. The villain takes about 5 to 7 seconds and shoves his remaining $50.
Well, I'll disagree a little bit. No worse hands are going to call a bet now. I would think that Queen 10 or Jack 10, or even King 10, would call here. So, I mean, you didn't play it like you had a 5 or a 7. You played it like you had a 10. And it just depends how good your 10 was, you know. And you could have raised with Jack 10. People do that all the time because they just, especially six-handed, you know, they're like, hey, I want to get some guys out of this, all these limpers out and play my Jack 10 the way, you know, play it like it's strong, blah, blah, blah. So he might think he's better with Queen 10. So I would definitely think that you can get a call if somebody has a 10, even 9-10. So because now the other thing, too, is how many times have we played poker where the board double pairs and somebody makes a bet with an ace in their hand thinking they're good because you didn't hit any of those pairs the way you played it. So now they might think, oh, my ace 3 of spades. Well, no, we had the spade. But let's just say somebody had like an ace, like we said earlier, you know, ace 6 of hearts or something, and they were just, you know. But you never know. So any random ace out there could conceivably think that their hand is good and they're going to bet on the end or call your bet because they have an ace. So I don't know what the ace would be. When we try to play it back, it's hard to imagine an ace that would keep calling.
An ace jack, maybe. That might be the only one. Ace queen, it's kind of hard to imagine there. But ace jack is kind of that middle range where you would call that raise.
But would you have called all the way with ace jack?
You got two overs there.
By that turn with 7?
Continuation betting. Yeah, that point is really pretty valid when you have those two pairs out there. Then now that your ace feels better. Your naked ace feels better. So, I mean, I don't know. We don't know anything about this player. So, you know, it's 50 cent a dollar. Our hero did describe that the game plays pretty solid at that level. So that does discount a lot of those hands, I guess, if that's the case. But we don't know this player either. So,
well, the thing that I'll go back to then is the float. So the guy could have played the same with ace jack thinking that we didn't hit this flop. And he called hoping to bet. And then when we bet again, he's like, I'm going to call again, have him check the river. But now he hits the two pair with his ace. So he could have ace jack or something like that. And it just happened to be that he was floating us, hoping to outplay us because we were in a small blind. And now he's got the ace. And it worked out to his favor that he actually made a hand. So that's how the ace jack could get there with all these bets and everything, I think. So I disagree. So I think he could have gotten a call from a couple of hands, at least, that were worse than his.
Okay. Well, we're definitely calling here.
We're definitely calling. Yeah, we're calling.
All right, our hero says, I wish I could say that I quickly counted the combinations of bluffs versus the combinations of value that he would have, but I'm not that good. Knowing that I was getting 3-1 to make the call, knowing that I had opened the door wide to let him bluff, and still having the feeling that he wasn't that strong, I called. Villain shows the 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs, and spends the next 10 minutes telling me what a horrible call it was. He says, looking back, I see the combinations, and he lists a bunch of combinations, so 21-8 bluffed the value. So maybe it wasn't so bad after all. Thoughts?
Well, the 9-8, he should have given it up on the turn, and he didn't. And then to say that it's a bad call, you have top pair, top kicker on a double-paired board that you clearly didn't have any piece of, and I'm getting a ton of money on my call because it was 150. It would have been 157 for $50 to win, so you're getting a ton of odds on your money with top pair, top kicker on a weird board that doesn't make a straight or a flush. I'm calling every time.
Yeah.
So this guy doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah, there's no way you could say that was a horrible call. Again, the math was there. Go back to what we were talking about. I'm like, I mean, we got the $50 out of this guy because we checked.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to call that $50 with 9 high.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so you're right. You got the value.
That did work. But the problem was that he didn't have enough money left to run this bluff.
Yeah.
He would have been better off saving that $50 knowing, I mean, you know you're going to lose if you check behind there, right?
Yeah.
So now you've got to evaluate what the chances are you are winning with that $50. And we always like to say, you know, you had to bet there to win in those scenarios, but that only works if you win. You know, if you get a call, then you lose and you lose more. So you got to figure out the value of that $50. And there just wasn't enough. You didn't have enough screws in your screwdriver to make that bluff work. So you were, I mean, it sucks, but he would be better off checking behind and saving that $50 for the next, I mean, and that was half of what he started with. So, but that $50 is not inconsequential. Here,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. If you could save half your stack and, you'd save half your stack no matter what size it is.
Yeah. So. I mean, there really was no expectation on our, it should have been no expectation on his point that we were not going to call that $50 bet.
Yep, I agree 100%. Don, thanks for the hand. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.